Oh, music from Selah. They do some nice work. When Love Was Slain. We're here too from Phillips, Craig, and Dean, the Revelation song. Now 10 and a half minutes after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning here along the Broken Road. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. He is a board member at Creation Moments and a good friend of the station, a member of our morning team. He's our resident biochemist, and we're glad to have him. Don, welcome. Happy Tuesday to you.
Well, good morning and happy Tuesday to you.
Well, it would be happier, but there's snow falling big time here this morning.
Oh, you're having snow?
Yeah. Oh, boy, are we ever.
Yeah, we're
getting it.
And it just it seems like a lot because we've been starved for it all year, but today and tonight, I guess we're going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are supposed to be up in the 70s today.
Oh my! You just wait a minute now. You're near Dallas. That's where all that snow fell in the last few days. And you mean it's gone now?
We were traveling mm-hmm. on Friday, mm-hmm. and we got caught. We got caught in all that snow and ice in Dallas, and it took us 5 hours to get home from Dallas Fort Worth, which is normally an hour and a half drive. Mm-hmm. So, but today, this is Texas after all, and temperatures can fluctuate as much as 50 degrees in one day, and that's what I think it's going to do today.
Well, actually, sounds pretty nice to me. I guess Dallas is okay. Dallas is back to being Dallas again today. Actually, it's not Dallas. Don is in Garden Valley, Texas, about 80 miles or so, 80, 90 miles east, not too far from Tyler, Texas, and he raises grapes, has a vineyard going for himself there, and he's learning how he's creating the Texas wine industry is what he's doing, and learning a lot along the way. We take a great joy in talking about his grapes and his vineyard exercises. But today we've got a topic that, kind of creeps me out here. In fact, I mentioned it to Dave here, and he said the same thing. He said, do you have sisters? I said, yeah, I have two sisters. The idea of marrying your sister just kind of strikes a painful chord in there somewhere. It's like, just out of the question. I mean, I love my sisters, but I mean, how could that ever? No, and well, it's illegal too. But I guess there was a time in the history of mankind when that had to happen, huh, Don? Would that be a fair way to state it?
Well, it certainly had to happen if Adam was the first man, mm-hmm. and he was the first woman, and then Adam. Adam and Eve start having sons. The question is, where did they get their wives?
That's been asked so many times. Certainly, there's a place in there that explains that. Where did these women come from?
Well, the only explanation, of course, is that they are daughters. Of course, they're daughters of Adam, and so the sons of Adam had to take daughters of Adam. for their wives, and we think of small families today, and most families are maybe a family group of four. If you're unusual like us, our family group was nine. We had mm-hmm. seven. We have seven kids, and Adam and Eve. Probably had hundreds of kids because, one, they lived a very long time. Adam lived to 930 plus years, and so they kept having kids for obviously a certain period of time during that all that time. Mm-hmm. So not only did they have a lot of kids, but their genetic makeup was pretty near perfect.
Well, that's got to be the key for a number, both for their ability to have children for many, many, many years. I mean, you figure when a modern couple is in past their 40s, they're not likely to have kids anymore by choice, and then by the natural flow of things here. But this, in Genesis 5, it says, after he begot Seth, the days of Adam were 800 years. Now, he'd already been around for a while.
130 years.
And he had sons and daughters. And this is the first mention I know of daughters female offspring in the whole Bible. And that's part of Genesis that we don't often dwell on. We kind of skip by that because of all those begots and all those names and all those lifespans. But you know, we concentrate on Genesis 1 and 2, and then we skip ahead to the end. But this is Genesis chapter 5, verse 4. He had daughters. So this is where the women came from. And the reason that, well, that you could get away with marrying your sister is what then? Is that connected with the genealogy as well? The genes, the DNA?
Well, certainly you can explain it from that point. I mean, one, you know, it's not really a good idea to marry your sister now because of the mutations that are in our gene pool. And, you know, the longer a man lives, the greater the population of defective genes. But back then, certain number of generations after Adam, it was perfectly fine and safe to marry your sister. And usually, your sister would probably, several years difference between you and your sister. So, but the main biological reason is that, well, okay, her gene pool and your gene pool are pretty much the same, and there's not very many mutations in it, and so it was fine.
Well, where do these mutations come from, and what are they?
Well, actually, the Bible kind of gives us a hint as to possible mutations in the human gene pool, because it does give us the age of several of the patriarchs, up until the time of the flood, and the average age is over 900 years. There were certain folks that got taken away, like Enoch, for example, at 300. But most people, were living well above 900 years, and even Noah, who went through the flood, he lived 930 plus years. So things didn't start to degenerate as far as man's lifespan until after the flood. So something happened at the flood that changed the environment. Obviously, a lot happened at the time of the flood. But whatever the atmosphere was like before the flood, some think it was a ice canopy around the whole globe that prevented radiation from outer space, for example, to reach the Earth, and so the genes wouldn't have gotten bombarded, with such rays before the flood. But after the flood, if that ice canopy collapsed, for example, then that radiation would reach the Earth, and the gene pool would start to degrade. So it's the and we have, for example, if you look in the Bible, that a very nice degradation curve, for example, of the age of people post flood that drops pretty much precipitously after a couple of generations past Noah.
Mm-hmm. Now this is a graph that listeners can see also. There's an article that to the Institute of Creation Research, which we will post a link to in the podcast a little bit later on, so you can take a look at this chart too. It's just a smooth downward curve that bends off to the right, and well, you'll see what we're talking about. Now, God said in Genesis that he was going to limit man's lifespan to 120 years, and it appears that perhaps this radiation may have been the way he did it, huh? I mean, it was a natural occurrence after the flood.
Well, it certainly certainly could have been the mechanism he had in mind. Obviously, mm-hmm. God is directing all of this, and he directed it from the very beginning when he was mm-hmm. thinking about how he was going to form the universe and man. And so, post-flood, it's Moses, for example, lived 120 years. Mm-hmm. And then even lifespans past Noah are continuously degrading. So you wind up having lifespans on an average of 80 to 70 years. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Bible, there's scriptural reference to say that your life will be 70 years unless you're a righteous man, in which case it'll be 80. And that's pretty much exactly where we are right now. We've got individuals who live to be above 100, so they must be super righteous or mm-hmm. living a wholesome life, or maybe it's still in their genes that they just happen to get the gene combination where they don't have quite as many defects in the genetic.
There seem to be people groups or population areas of the world where people tend to live older.
Which would suggest that as a people group, if they're isolated from others, that perhaps as I said, their gene pool isn't quite as degraded as say some of us that live in either a more populated area or a more mixed population area. Mm-hmm. The genetic mix, of course, all of this doesn't speak to evolution. It speaks to the theory of devolution again, mm-hmm. and in that man's lifespan isn't increasing as time goes on. Of course, there was a period of time, let's say in the Middle Ages, where lifespans were a lot shorter than they are today, but that was for nutritional reasons and lack of knowledge in how to get the proper nutrition, as opposed to what is the potential of man's lifespan. Mm-hmm. If you give him, for example, a good nutrition, how long could he possibly live? Mm-hmm. And of course, people died from diseases and everything, but now we have a better handle on what causes many of the common diseases. So there's a lot of things that go into how a people group is living at that particular time, or at least how long their lifespan is. But if you normalize that, in general, people today are living about 70 to 80 to maybe 90 years, there's something about our DNA that says, okay, I've had enough. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about on this program, for example, the telomeres at the end of DNA, of the DNA, that is the spot on the DNA where the copying mechanism starts. Mm-hmm. For the DNA, and it loses a telomere sequence every time you copy the DNA. Well, after so many copies, you don't have any telomeres anymore, and then that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if God has programmed a internal clock, even into our cells and into the nucleus of our cells, that says, you know what, it doesn't matter how much nutrition you get, how safe or a lifestyle you live, you're gonna die. Mm-hmm. And so his word remains true that the wages of sin is death, and there's really not much that man can do, if anything, to prevent an ultimate death.
I'm curious about this idea that it's a creepy thought to consider marrying your sister. Why do we react like that? Adam married his half sister. Abram did. Sarah was his half sister, and that seemed to be okay, socially acceptable, not a big deal. Well, at least the Bible doesn't treat it like it was anything unusual. So we can assume, I think, that in that time, in Abraham's time, it was acceptable to do that kind of thing. Later, God laid down the law to Moses, and I don't know whether it's Deuteronomy or Leviticus, but he said that's a no-no. So at some point, it must have, God laid down the law for a reason, and I'm wondering what was the tipping point? Did man sense that it was a creepy thing to do, just have that feeling that it was wrong, or does that creepy feeling result from God's requirement passed down to Moses, do you suppose? I mean, it's got to be cultural, doesn't it? Not biological.
Well, yeah. you're asking a mixed question there. Mm-hmm. Of course,
I'm famous.
It is
famous
a cultural
for that,
thing. Yeah. I think we think of marrying your sister as a negative thing because that's how we were brought up. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're back in immediately post Adam time, then it was a quite acceptable thing, and the only thing that you really were doing, and I mean because. You're marrying your sister, you're marrying your cousin, you're marrying, mm-hmm. You're certainly marrying a relative, as in the case of Abraham. At some point in time, God saw the degradation of lifespan. And of course, he knew that the genetic pool was being degraded. And it's the same reason, today that we don't keep inbreeding animals. If you have mm-hmm. a herd, let's say here in Texas, if you have a herd of cows, you get your neighbor's bull, for example, to breed with your cows, and he gets your bull, for example, and so you keep the mix of the gene pool as diverse as possible mm-hmm. to eliminate birth defects due to genetic reasons. And God in his wisdom knew that this was coming, and at some point in time had to lay down the law, and since Moses was the lawgiver through God, why not do it at that time when the Ten Commandments and the Leviticus was being given by God and putting all this stuff together. It's an interesting thing how in biblical times things seem to happen just at the right time. I mean, you got to ask your question. Well, why did God do it then and not earlier, as I think you were suggesting? Mm-hmm. And it all points to, at least from a biological point of view, you would say, well, okay, yeah, if your lifespan has decreased from 900 plus years down to 120 plus years, maybe that's about the time that we need to start putting some restrictions on who you marry, mm-hmm. and close relatives or at least brothers and sisters shouldn't be marrying at that particular time.
Do you suppose that human beings would have sensed that themselves? That the practice was resulting in diseases or early death. Do you think they would have known that without God's interdiction there?
Well, it took an awful long time for us to figure out the DNA and the genetic code. Perhaps some people would have made some observations. I don't think so. I think it would have taken a whole lot longer, for man to figure this thing out, on himself, mm-hmm. For himself. Now, remember, even the generations after Noah, for example, if Noah lived 930 years, his whole lifespan. Well, he was 600 years when he went into the flood, and so that means that he had 300 plus years after. So he was a patriarch for a long time, and in the generations after Noah, his great 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 grandsons, for example, would have seen him, and they could have said, well, why is Grandpa living so long? Mm-hmm. What is it? And we seem to be dying off at 200 100 plus years. Maybe they would have gotten the clue and said, "There's something going on here that we don't quite understand."
That's a fascinating. That's a fascinating picture, because you could see it culture wide, probably, that people weren't they were being outlived by their grandparents. That would have been really strange.
Oh yeah, and their great great grandparents. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was.
But it would have been normal life for them, because it hadn't been any other way up to that point. We would see that now as startling. And alarming to them, it must have been a real riddle.
Well, but you weren't that far away from, you know, away from Noah and the flood, and you you would have known, for example, that there was a great catastrophe that happened upon the earth, and your great-great-great-grandpa would be telling you the story of how man lived, you know, 900 plus years, and because of the evil on the earth, you know, God had to do something. And this is what he did. And so you're making the best of life. And, you know, even today, you know, we kind of think whatever's happening in our generation has happened, you know, in the past. You don't just, you don't often think about, well, how did folks live, you know, back then? How did folks live 200 years ago, 300 years ago? You can go to some parts of the world and get a hint as to how they lived, because conditions haven't changed much, you know, for those those folks. To really, you know, to really understand what conditions of you know, of life were and how hard they were, even in this country with our short history. Okay, you can go back and take a look at Abraham Lincoln's, you know, log cabin, and get a feel for, you know, how he lived and how he had to live. Of course, it was before electricity was invented, and you know, internal plumbing, and that type of stuff. And so you would say, well, you know, those are pretty harsh conditions if you got to live under those, and people did. And you know, but to think back, you know, before the flood and how lush the earth was, you know, even after the fall, the earth was still a pretty good, you know, almost near perfect. To have the food readily available, even though you still had to till the soil, as opposed to being in the garden, you know, life was a lot easier before the flood than post-flood. So it would have made for a lot of questions, I think, for Noah's children and great grandchildren and great 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 grandchildren, for example, to ask Grandpa, you know, Grandpa Noah about how were things before the flood,
back in the olden days.
Yeah,
back in the olden days.
Now, David, you know this, and I don't know if Don knows this, but I heard this not too long ago, that folks in Minnesota tend to live longer than people in many other areas. I mean, we're known for longevity here, so I think we can conclude that cold weather and high taxes are conducive to long lives then.
I think it seems that way.
Yeah.
I think it just, you know, just it feels like it's longer.
Yeah, it just seems longer.
Maybe that's it.
I got you.
Well, you know, if you're hibernating, I suppose that your metabolism is a lot slower.
Excellent point there. Yeah,
that's a good point.
That
now,
happens.
And you know, I guess we're on the same line here. The over the last 100 years in this country, I mean, the life expectancy has gotten longer and longer and longer. But, you know, you don't have to go very far away from this country to see, in fact, even parts of the country internally, you can see the, you know, the way that people live. And maybe there is a direct correlation between that and their life expectancy. I know South Africa, the people in the hinterlands are living pretty close to the ground. They don't have electric lights, and they're still using outhouses. They're a little nicer outhouses than the ones that I used when I was a kid. But I'm wondering if we reached a point in this country where life expectancy was what, 30, 40, maybe as high as the early 50s, and when the Social Security law was passed, life expectancy was 65. Or actually 61. And, you know, now it's up to 78, 83, you know, depending upon where you live. So, you know, these are kind of fledgling starts. There was no magic bullet. There was no wave of the magic wand. Nobody corrected DNA or mutations. But it seems like there's a gradual trend towards longer lifespan. Is there somebody out there that's going to make the giant leap to start looking at the DNA molecules and say, we need to get rid of this mutation, but not this one, and well, reverse the trend even more?
You hit on a very interesting subject, because as man learns more and more about our DNA, and we've already completed the human genome project, for example, and that was a project of sequencing all of our all of the human DNA. You can think then that because of the evilness of man, that he will take it upon himself to say, oh, we can only live, to be such and such, age, theoretically, because our DNA degrades after that. Let's manipulate the DNA, and let's take all of the, let's see if we can figure out what the perfect DNA is. And we'll just make a egg and stick all the perfect DNA in there. And we'll have a perfect human, at least physically, that would come out of that. Now, this sounds familiar to what happened in Germany and what Hitler was trying to do mm-hmm. with the Aryan race. So it would not surprise me if somebody has that in their mind even today and are is trying to manipulate the DNA, trying to come up with manufacturing, for example, in quote, the perfect DNA. Now, there is a problem in that you don't know what the perfect DNA is. Right. But certainly, the more we learn about the diseases, in particular genetic diseases, then we can rule out that, well, if you've got this sequence for your DNA, you're going to have this disease, so let's fix the sequence. And you can start, fixing those sequences and start building, at least internally within a computer, let's say, a more perfect sequence. And so it gets you back to, to trying to synthesize, if you will, a perfect human. Now, that's a problem, for God, and he's going to bring things to an end before that actually comes about. If we, for example, increase our lifespan back to the 500, 600, 900 years, you have to first ask a question: why did God decrease the lifespan in the first place? Well, he decreased it because man's thoughts were continuously evil right before the flood. And so the longer we live, the more propensity that we have to become evil, and not only evil, but even more evil. And so God, in his wisdom, decreased the lifespan of man so that we would have a chance of living several generations post-flood, as opposed to, because it wouldn't have taken long if man's lifespan remained at 900 years, it wouldn't have taken long for him to destroy himself again.
I guess I'm thinking, the reversal in lifespans in this country, you kind of remind me of the old saw about, I guess I really can't tell that joke on this program, can I just not eat my broccoli? And yeah, I may be paraphrasing, not eat my broccoli until I have to wear glasses. We're nibbling around the edges, and and so far, he hasn't smacked us down yet. I wonder if we get to 150 or 200, if that's the culture that we live in is not gonna stop at 110, and they're gonna continue to try to push the envelope even further. And when that magic biochemist out there figures out that there's a simple little chemical wash that you can run the DNA through and get rid of all the nasty mutations, we're off to the races. I mean, the barn door is now open and the cows have gone. There was a story last month about the paternity lawyers in England are scratching their heads now, because they've found that there's the first fertilized egg that a woman is carrying that's been has been fertilized or injected with the DNA from two other people. So she now has, this child now has two mothers and a father. And they're scratching their heads in the court saying, well, who gets the money? You know, or who gets the kid? Or who gets possession? I mean, it's. I mean, they're talking about the legalities of it all, but somebody's already doing this. Somebody's already trying to figure out. And I think in this particular case, the child or one of the mothers had a genetic disease that was being passed on, and instead of her passing that gene on, the second woman. Genes from her egg were replaced or replaced the ones that were defective. And I could have been sickle cell. I'm not sure.
And of course, remember the island of Dr. Moreau, where all the research was going on and all the weird creatures were created? Yeah. I mean, this has been a desire of man for a long time.
Sure.
We fear death. We would like to eliminate it. We want to be immortal. And whether it's the humanistic train of thought that way or belief in God who will grant an eternal life. I mean, we're gonna seek something out, and until we have a handle on it, there's no stopping us. I mean, we will pursue that until the end of days.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, we do live in a fallen world, and as you know, as I said before, I mean, if we begin to go down that path, as it seems like we're starting to, and it's a natural tendency of the evilness in us, and you would say, well, that doesn't sound like evil, just replacing some defective, mutated genes with good genes. I mean, that should be all right. Well, yeah, but now you're mixing the genetic pool from two people, three people, four people, 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, you know, and we get all mixed up. You know, at the very end, I think, you know, as you said, Jim, we are seeking to live an eternal life here on Earth, and after the fall, for example, but God said that's not possible. So
yeah, we want that back. I think there's a, whether it's in our DNA or just in our brains or maybe in our spirits, we have a sense that we were once given that gift of eternal life, and we want it back. We want that relationship back. And that
I might add, we want it back without God. And God says, "Well, you're going to live forever. Either you're going to live it with me, or you're going to live it, you know, someplace else. You are going to live, you know, forever, but it's, you know, going to be in a different form."
Reminds me of that famous C.S. Lewis quote. I can only paraphrase it now. I don't have it in front of me, but he said, "You've never spoken with a mortal being." They're either going to be immortal in heaven or they'll be immortal in hell, one of the two. And he said that for the purpose of giving us some idea of the value of a human being, that this is an immortal being, and to see them as such. An interesting topic, and it's an article at Institute of Creation Research on their website. The article is by Brian Thomas. It's called, "Where Could Adam's Sons Find Wives?" That's what we've been dealing with today. It'll be up as a podcast at brokenroadradio.com here in an hour or two with a link, and you'll be able to see this chart, which ultimately confirms Dr. Don Clark's theory of devolution, which we have talked about from time to time here. Don,
have you published that yet, Don? If you don't publish this pretty quickly, I'm going to go back to school, get a doctorate, and publish it myself.
Yeah, somebody's going to say,
this is just too good. I give you a footnote if you like. You can help me on some of the thorny stuff. But I spent the night with a bunch of liberals last night, and I'm just thinking, I can just wait for the next meeting, and I get up and I tell them about my new theory of devolution. Somebody will say, somebody get a steak. Yeah. And, you know, maybe a book of matches. Is it? Can we put this guy out already?
Don, we appreciate what you bring to us every week, and we'll look forward to next Tuesday, and we'll decide on the topic twixt now and then, and it's just always good to have you around. Dr. Don Clark, creationmoments.com is the website. He's on the board at Creation Moments. You'll find a wealth of information, scientific information there, that argues persuasively for the young earth creationist position. It's science you don't get to see everywhere. In fact, darn few places do you get to see that. Creation Moments is one of them. I urge you to visit the website. You can link to it from us at brokenroadradio.com. Don, take care. We'll see you in a week. Bye-bye.
Okay, so long.
See you, Don. Enjoyed it.